never had intended to have a popular astronomy stream on Twitch. My son is a competitive gamer, and about 4 years ago, he introduced me to Twitch, and I started watching some of the personalities on there, and I realized this was kind of a new form of media. Anyway, so this guy, TimePath, just chimes in on the chat, and he says, "Hey, could you show me the Andromeda Galaxy?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. I'm over here in Iran. I'm in Tehran, Iran, and I can't afford a telescope, and I'm here with my son, and I want to show him. As a kid, I used to do astronomy with my dad, but we don't have a telescope now, and I was wondering if you could show him that." I said, "Sure." So I'm showing him that, and pretty soon, people started coming in and asking me to show him stuff, and then we started yucking it up like you do on Twitch, and this kind of culture started developing.
Econ Greg, an economics professor and amateur astronomer who is becoming a rising star on Twitch because he is live streaming his observing sessions through his telescopes with all of us. He's with us today on Space Junk Podcast, so let's get started. Hello everyone, and welcome to Space Junk, a weekly podcast dedicated to the amazing hobby of amateur astronomy. Each week, we'll bring you interesting and fun discussions with an eye towards providing you with the latest information and advice on the tools, gadgets, software, and techniques for maximizing your enjoyment of the night sky. Your hosts are Tony Darnell from deepastronomy.space and Dustin Gibson from OPT Telescopes, a world leader in telescopes and accessories.
So Greg, what's up, man? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Appreciate you inviting me here, and this is a treat for me for sure.
It's been awesome watching everything kind of develop with what you're doing on Twitch. We got to dive right into that because some of it is super innovative. And when you first told me about the optoscope, I was like, yeah, that's a really cool idea, but it sounds like one of those, there's no way that's going to work, especially anytime soon. And then you guys had that thing running. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're just waiting on you to get me a scope, and we were good to go. That idea hatched early on. Maybe we'll go back a second and kind of let you know where the stream kind of developed in the first place and how it came about. I was talking to Tony about this earlier, and it turns out I never had intended to have a popular astronomy stream on Twitch. My son is a competitive gamer, and about 4 years ago, he introduced me to Twitch, and I started watching some of the personalities on there, and I realized this was kind of a new form of media. These were jobs that had just come out of nowhere, you know, professional video game streamer. And I teach economics as a profession, so I would tell my students that, you know, there's new jobs being created every day. You just got to look around for them. So I got into that whole world, that whole culture, with kind of supporting my son and his gaming interests, and he kept kind of bugging me. He said he'd seen me doing my astronomy, and he said, you know, all of your astronomy is all software. It's all just, you know, digital. You know, you could stream that on Twitch. You could get Streamlabs OBS and stream that, and I can watch you do your astronomy from Atlanta. I'm down here in Macon, Georgia, and my dad is also about 5 hours away, and he's almost 80. He has his 80th birthday coming up here this month. And so, you know, I figured I could stream my astronomy into him, and he's interested in this stuff, and he could watch it also. So my son set up my whole platform so I could broadcast it. And knowing Twitch, we just put it through there. And I just started streaming my sessions to my dad and to my son. And after about a week, people started checking in. And also I'd notice there'd be like 7 people in there. I'm like, who the hell is watching me do my astronomy? This is kind of creepy. And they would,
some voyeurs.
Yes. Like, what's going on here? And then at one point, this guy, his name was the Time Path. And by the way, on Twitch, you have all of these classic gamer names, like, I Will Destroy You 69.
Yeah, I didn't know I was supposed to do that, man. I have the worst Twitch name ever. Mine is just Dustin Gibson.
Yeah,
and it's like, I got on there and I was like, yeah, Look at this lame guy. He doesn't know how Twitch works. You know, I didn't know I was supposed to be cool like that.
Yeah, that's the culture there, right? It's the 69 Fart Lord 420. It's like the most popular name. You got to kind of embrace that kind of young gamer mentality to kind of fit in over there at Twitch. And so anyway, so this guy TimePath just chimes in on the chat and he says, "Hey, could you show me the Andromeda galaxy?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. Who are you?" And he's like, "Well, I'm TimePath. I'm over here in Iran. I'm in Tehran, Iran, and I can't afford a telescope. And I'm here with my son. And I want to show him. As a kid, I used to do astronomy with my dad, but we don't have a telescope now. And I was wondering if you could show him that." I said, "Sure." So I'm showing him that. And pretty soon people started coming in and asking me to show him stuff. And then we started yucking it up like you do on Twitch. And this kind of culture started developing. And after a while, I started kind of advertising myself as the unholy matrimony between Twitch culture and astrophotography, because that's what it was. It was just this weird blending of things that hadn't been done. So you talk about innovative, it just kind of came out of nowhere. Wasn't a plan, wasn't anything I meant to do. It just happened.
That's how you know it's going to be big, because that stuff just comes out when it's organic, it's real, it's got good foundation, and you know it's going to be huge. So you started doing this how long ago?
That was October. So what, 5 months ago?
Oh, so this is pretty new stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It took off fast. It started growing. After about a week of that, it went from, you know, two viewers to 7 or 8 or 9 viewers. And all of a sudden I was at 10 or 20 viewers. And then I got rated by, Daz Valdez, who does, Kerbal Space Program on Twitch, right. And a super popular streamer. And he rated me. And at the time, I didn't know what a raid was.
I still don't.
And all of a sudden, I had 50 people. So when you have an audience at Twitch, maybe you'll have 100, 200 people in there watching you stream. At some point, after about 10 hours, you're done streaming. And then you gotta leave. You got to cut them off. And you got this community of your friends there. And it's kind of rude just to hit the, you know, delete button and leave. So what you do is you gather up everybody. And then you go find another streamer who's currently streaming, and you drop all of your viewers in their channel.
Yeah.
And it's a raid, and they go in there. They're completely disruptive. They start, you know, just spamming chat with all kinds of garbo, and it's fun. And then the person is very appreciative because they just went from having 50 people in the room to having a couple hundred in the room. And that's how you grow your stream is you have to have your elevator speech ready for people to come in and say, you know, "Hey guys, welcome to the stream. What we're doing here is, you know, XYZ," and you're off to the races. But I had my first raid and, had like 200 people in there, and I'm like, okay, now I gotta perform. Yeah. And, yeah.
Daz Valdez is really good, cool too, because he does the launches down here in Cape Kennedy, and yep. So he's, you know, he does really good job, and he's a lot of fun with KSP as well. So
yeah,
I watched. He was one of the first people I started watching on Twitch. So yeah, that's big. That's huge.
Yeah, he's a pro, and I started watching him.
I feel like we're witnessing the evolution of outreach right now with these new tools. You know, I mean, you think about. If you went and stood on the corner outside in your local city, like you would get maybe, you know, I asked 100 people through there looking at the telescope or something, but you can jump online and do this and show people deep space images live from wherever they are and reach thousands and thousands in a night doing the same thing and having an open discussion the same way, right. If not more efficiently than you could if you were just standing outside, you know?
Oh, 100%. And it's a global audience as well, not just your neighborhood, right? So you've got people from, you know, I've got viewers in Indonesia. I've got a lot of Danish viewers. I'm the number two streamer in Slovakia right now because one of the top streamers in Slovakia rated me one night, dropped 1,000 people in my room. And all these Slovakians apparently love astronomy. And so now they come in and they'll just spam the chat with all kinds of Slovakian. I have no idea what they're talking about, but it's fun. I don't care. I'll show them stars all night long.
And
I was going to say, what is that process like? You said, you know, you've got to have your elevator pitch ready and, you know, you really have to be ready to get on stage in that way. But you're doing this for so long. I mean, hours in a night. It's not like you're jumping on for 30 minutes and then you're gone. How long is a typical stream? Right.
So I average probably 6 hours per stream. I'll start, get going about 7 or 8, depending on the time of year, as late as 9. You know, sometimes in the summer, it doesn't get dark until 9 down here. So I'll start at 7, 8, or 9 and end up going until 2, 3, 4 in the morning, sometimes till sunrise. So I've done 11 and a half hour streams. One thing, this long format is completely bizarre. I still have not figured this out, but my average viewer will stay there for an average of 5.5 or 6 hours. And I'm like, that's just unheard of to have someone's attention for that long in this day and age, right? So,
well, the way I've heard it's working is that one of the advantages to these super long format streaming content is they will put it on in the background. Some people will put on something just so they can relax, just so they can get their mind off of whatever is bothering them that day. And they will put up Twitch as a sort of an ambient thing that's in the room, and then they'll interact, you know, when something catches their eye or whatever. So it's sort of like having someone in your room with you, you know, while you're trying to decompress or get over the day or get over your stresses of the day. It's being used a lot in that way. And so, that's one of the things I've heard anyway.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I've had a lot of feedback in that direction where people have just said, you know, I've got the space music going in the background, just a little, you know, cosmic sounding music that's just kind of mellow. And the joke was that I was the Bob Ross of astrophotography. And
you don't want to minimize that, right? That's huge, because he had an enormous audience for that very same reason. It's sort of like before ASMR got big, there was Bob Ross. And so it's a very similar thing. And I'm not saying that's what's going on in your channel, but one of the reasons people stay on for multi hours is that they are there with you, but they're getting other things out of it in the background as well.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I'm more than honored to be called the Bob Ross of astronomy.
Sure. So how do you balance this, Greg? I mean, with like, you have a job you have to go to. How do you balance 6 and 7 hour streams with that?
I don't know. I'm just doing it. It's so weather dependent. You know, luckily as a professor, my courses are fairly concentrated on Mondays and Wednesdays. So I kind of have these, you know, gaps in the week when I can stay up late. I typically don't do a lot of sleeping as it is. I am busy. I've got a full-time job as a professor. I also run a consulting firm that does digital media marketing, and I don't have a lot of hours dedicated to that, but there is some requirement on my time. And I also do a lot of litigation work, and we're doing some pretty big class action lawsuits right now and damage assessments and things like that. So my other persona as an economist is a pretty busy guy, but I don't know. I'm happily single right now, and I've got a lot of time on my hands. My son's in college, so I don't have the daily, you know, routine with raising a kid anymore. And that's kind of an empty nester all by myself. So it's given me a lot of time to develop this online community. And I crave it. I want to be with the folks out there.
No, it's awesome. It's a really entertaining stream. You know, I try to jump on there as often as I can. It's rare that I'm going to be able to do 5 or 6 hours, but you know, I try to pop in when I can, and it's always entertaining. I think half of the entertainment comes from, you know, the viewers and just the comments you see coming through. You know, it's some of these people are so funny with the things they say, and just, you can tell they're waiting for that moment that they can just inject this comment that they've had brewing for the longest time. But some of it's funny, man. Some of it's really funny.
Oh, they crack me up. Yeah. I really enjoy the, you know, interacting with them, and we try to keep it light, try to keep it fun. We've developed a lot of memes, and you know, we've got a lot of flat earthers coming in there. We got a lot of alien conspiracy theorists, you know, Area 51 folks in there, and we try to humor them and not be so pretentious and snarky that we run people off. I mean, just have fun with it and try to out troll the trolls sometimes.
Yeah. I don't like that about especially some of these science streams, is when it's like, look, everybody already gets that you're smart. You don't have to come on here and prove it to everyone. Just like relax a little bit. Let everybody enjoy this. Like nobody has to be here, you know? And your stream definitely is not that, where it's definitely not something where you come in and you're going to get lectured to for 6 hours. But it's a great conversation. It's super fun. And it's been amazing to watch it progress, and progress it definitely has. I mean, it is growing insanely rapidly, and now you've got this optoscope going, and yeah. I mean, that idea is truly, I don't know a word outside of innovative for it.
Well, yeah, thanks for that. A couple of things on that. First, it was early on with the stream when the core group kind of settled in the first month or so, and I just know these guys as their handle. So Foony and Architufus and Time Path and Third Rock Astronomy, 8 Key 12, just this whole group of folks that were coming together. And one of the
I recognize some of those names.
Yeah, Starchface. I mean, there's a bunch of them out there.
Arctufus and Third Rock. I know those guys.
they're all over the place. They won't shut up. That's cool. I love them. And Third Rock was one of the first guys to be doing online astronomy streaming. He's just in Seattle, so he's just got bad luck with the weather there. So that core group early on, you know, really helped me out. They were saying things like, where's your Discord server? I'm like, yeah, I don't know what that is. you're gonna have to help me out. And so literally one of my viewers built me a Discord server and got that up and running. And now that's, you know, Econ Greg's Astronomy Hub over on Discord is like a very popular hangout for people to chat, talk about telescopes and stuff like that. But in those discussions over on Discord, people started saying, hey, Greg, why don't you let us control your scope? And I was like, hell no. No, I don't want you guys.
Get away from my scope.
Yeah, I don't mind sharing astronomy with you guys, but I don't want you. That's why I'm streaming this. I don't want you touching
my stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So we went back and forth with that. And it was, you know, there's two camps. One that was like, no, we want control of a scope there. And the other camp was saying, no, that's silly. They're going to make that scope dance around and point it at your butt or something. You know, it's just going to be silly. Don't do that. And so we went back and forth on it for a while. And then we started talking with you guys, Dustin, over at OPT. And you were super upfront. You're like, hey, whatever you guys need, you let me know. And I took that back to the guys. It's like, you guys want to do a scope that you can control? I think Dustin's going to hook us up. And they got excited, and we started thinking about the optimal scope that could be a viewer controlled scope so that I could still have mine. I could still do all of my things that I do with the stream. And then we could have a second scope that would be controlled by the viewers, and people jumped on board. We got people all around the world programming this thing for us, getting the command software up and running. We're on our third iteration. We actually, after our first stream with the Optoscope last Friday, we scrapped the entire platform and built a new one in the last week.
Wow.
And because it wasn't working the way we wanted it to. So we got a lot of those kinks worked out. So we're going live again this Friday, and who knows, we'll bump into more problems. I kind of liken it to Elon Musk blowing up rockets on boats until he did it. Yeah. And that's what we're doing. We're just going to blow up some more rockets until we get this thing landed. And
yeah, I was watching that stream where you guys were, it was something happened. I guess it was, I don't know what time it was, about 11 o'clock. I was watching it, and it wasn't doing something. And you have a helper also, don't you? Or maybe you have many people who help.
Yeah.
You.
That cord. Funi is the main guy. Yeah. Funi is the guy. That's the one.
That was the, yeah. So he was okay. Or he or she was the one that was, commenting that they were working out some bugs and things like that. So,
yeah.
But the idea is really simple, right? It's just a user controlled scope where all you have to do is be watching in Twitch, and you can just type in like Andromeda and then watch the scope move to it. It puts it in queue,
yep,
and then starts showing you images of whatever you want to see.
Yeah. And that came out of this, you know, whenever I'm back there doing my stream, you know, new viewers will come in and say, oh, what are you doing? And like, oh, I'm showing people, you know, the stars with my telescope. That's a live image. Yeah. How are you doing that? There's a camera on my scope. So I go through the whole routine, tell them what, you know, how it's actually working. And then inevitably they'll say, well, can you show me Saturn? Right? They all want to see Saturn. I'm like, no, Saturn's not even up right now. It's behind a tree or something. So I can't show you Saturn right now. And so part of this whole Optoscope idea was to say, you want to see Saturn? Go ahead and punch it in, and you control that scope over there and have at it and go see what you want to see. So it's tricky. There was a lot of moving parts. It seemed like a pretty simple idea on the surface, but we're juggling a lot of balls to keep that thing going. And we think we got it dialed in now, should be good to go on the next stream. But we're going to keep ironing out the kinks. There's a couple of, you know, there's just, you know, here's an issue that we're still working. We're still problem shooting. For instance, if someone's looking at the moon, to look with the 10-inch scope, which is the Optoscope, is a Newtonian 10-inch scope. And to look at the moon with that, you have to have the settings, you have to have the gain turned all the way down to zero, basically, you know, that lowest ISO setting on the camera. And you got to be doing about a 4 millisecond exposure time. So you're looking at a live feed of the moon with super tuned down settings. And then someone types in that they want to go take the Optoscope and go look at Andromeda Galaxy. Well, looking at Andromeda Galaxy at zero gain for four 1,000th of a second, you're not going to see anything. It's going to be black. So you got to crank it up to 15 seconds at 250 gain. And that's the part that we're kind of working on, is how to automate that part so that the camera will automatically adjust, because no one has that software. So when you talk about innovative, yeah, no one's doing this stuff yet. So we're having to kind of build that software from scratch.
So you need like a deep sky object template and a, you know, planet or moon template for the settings on the camera. And then it would just need to know what it's about to slew to and set those settings in. I see.
Yeah. There's a lot of work in getting up. So what we're doing, think about it. We're not doing astrophotography. We are doing astrophotography. I'll get back to that in a second. But mainly what we're doing on the stream is I'm showing you guys live feeds of what's up in the sky. And to do that, it's not astrophotography where you take an hour worth of image data and then compile it, spend hours processing it, and produce a pretty picture. I don't have time to do that on the stream. Likewise, we're not doing visual where you just kind of point a scope at something and look at it, because that tends to be a little underwhelming sometimes with some of the faint, fuzzy objects that people want to look at. So I'm trying to split the difference there and get a nice like 30-second exposure that will be a rolling live feed that really shows detail. So if we're looking at the Orion Nebula, you can see the wispy clouds, you can see the bright core, and you can see a lot like the Running Man Nebula next door. And just so happened, we got real lucky and we had the right setup for this. The Celestron Rossa scope, that's my main scope, it's such a fast, optically speaking, a fast telescope that in 15 seconds, I can get fantastic pictures and show them to people. So that's been just a godsend, having that particular scope. Celestron should send me some free stuff, because I've been pimping them hard.
So yeah, 11 inches of aperture on that scope at f2.2.
Yep.
I mean, yeah,
it's phenomenal.
If you can't see it with that, you shouldn't be looking.
Yeah, that's been so cool.
Well, before we leave the optoscope, what kind of camera do you have on that?
So I've got a slew of ZWO cameras. So ZWO is out of China. They make these CMOS cameras that are designed for astrophotography. My main camera is a ZWO ASI 294 MC Pro. So it's got the cooling chip on it, cools it down to -20-30 degrees Celsius, cuts the noise down dramatically. So I just have that cranked up to totally cold, just to kill most of the noise. I also have a couple of 178s, ZWO 178s that are slightly smaller chip. Those are better for looking at planets and things like that. And we're getting a ZWO 533 for the optoscope. That's one that we're kind of waiting on. I think it's on back order. But once we get that, the optoscope will be dialed in perfect.
And what's on it now then? With just one of those cameras, or one of?
Yeah, I'm using the 178 right now on it, which is kind of the camera for that scope. That's been an issue. We contemplated the idea of holding off until we had the perfect gear, but it's like, you know what, guys, we got a lot of problem solving to get through here. Let's just get this going and let's get it out there. So that's why, if you saw the last stream, some of the images weren't showing up properly and stuff like that. We knew we'd have those problems, and it was a full moon to boot. So we knew there was going to be some issues, but we were able to troubleshoot things and realize what we needed to change to make it right going forward.
Yeah, but even so, I noticed the interaction you were having, people were still having fun. So it was,
it was still
well received. So,
yeah.
Well, this is something we talk about all the time, but space is above us every single night and not accessible in any way for most of the population of the planet and most of the generations that have ever existed. You know it's there, but it's all very academic. But something like this creates an experience out of that. It's, being able for the first time to walk around your own neighborhood and see what's there and have a level of control over that exploration instead of, I wonder if anyone has done this for me yet where I can see a static image of it that was taken at some point in time. Now it's like, right. I want to see Andromeda. I want to see it right now. And, you're giving that control to people.
Yeah, it's super interactive. I've learned a ton. When I first started, the funny thing happened. It was actually Third Rock, Architufus, and Funi were all in there, and I was trying to do what I was trying to do. I was trying to show them stuff, and they're like, "Why are you using RGB 24 on your camera settings?" And I'm like, "I don't know, because I can't get anything else to work." And like, "No, go to 16-bit," and I'm like, "Yeah, but that doesn't look right." And they're like, "What do you mean?" "Well, it doesn't look right." "Well, you're not debayering correctly." I'm like, "Yeah, what's debayering? I don't know what that is." And they were kind of razzing me about it. I just didn't know. I didn't know all this stuff. And And I was a rookie. And so pretty soon they're like, you know, they're helping me out, and I've become a much better astrophotographer. And that's kind of the core of what we're doing. We got a broad audience. We got people who are advanced astrophotographers who do fantastic work, all the way down to total rookies who've never looked through a telescope before. And they all want to kind of come in there and see things. And we've taken people who've never done any astrophotography, and they're putting pictures out. As a matter of fact, in the Orbit newsletter that you guys put out, Dustin, that picture was Arcturus's picture. He didn't start doing astrophotography until October, until we started the stream. That's when he first started with astrophotography. And he took those raw images and he did that processing. He stacked them. He put them into Photoshop and did all that stuff, and then sent me the picture back. And I forwarded it to put it on my Instagram site, and you guys featured it in your astronomy picture of the month.
So, yeah, well, I had no idea he'd been doing it for such a short period of time. That image is incredible.
Yeah, that's, again, that RASA gets great data, and I put those raw files up on our Google Share Drive, and anybody who's watching can get, you know, download those files. You know, there's plenty of free software, Deep Sky Stacker, Raw Therapy, GIMP. There's a couple of good processing packages out there. Anybody can download those images and take a hack at it, and that's what Arcturus did, and he's putting out phenomenal work.
Yeah, the images are, I mean, especially from the RASA, when you're talking about it, the time investment, I mean, it's not uncommon that I put, you know, 40 hours into an image, and then I jump on your stream, and every 15 seconds I'm seeing this new image, and it's really fun to do. But, you know, it's funny because a lot of the people following your Twitch account have found me on Instagram. I've been getting almost daily messages on Instagram now with people asking me about Twitch. And so I don't know much about Twitch outside of just, you know, being a fan of yours and, you know, Skylius and a few others, you know, Fraser Kane. And so I'm getting these messages and they're like, Dustin, why don't you do a Twitch? I'm like, damn it, Greg. Like, I don't know where to start with that. And then, yeah, the same thing, like talking about Discord, and it's like, man, I'm sorry, guys, but that's what Greg's got you covered. He's got this awesome content. Let's go back and watch that together. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's Twitch is a new platform, and it's been around for a while. It's been around for years now. It started off as Justin TV. You may have heard of that back in the day. And people were streaming. People would like stream images of their TVs showing basketball games and football games. So you could kind of go do that. And I'm not sure how legal that was, but people were doing that for a while. And then it evolved into Twitch because it became kind of a video game platform. Out of that, it became a video game platform. And just recently, a couple of years ago, Amazon bought Twitch for about $1 billion. So all of the video game tournaments around the world, like the League of Legends, League Championship Series, and all that kind of stuff, they're all broadcast through Twitch. It's just this online live channel. It's still intimidating to a lot of older bros like us. You know, it's a little bit younger crowd than what we're used to, and they're more comfortable there. But you know, I tell people it's just like YouTube, but kind of live instead of recorded videos. That's kind of what it is, and you just have to go there, open an account, and then just come into it, you know, just come into the channel when it's streaming, turn on your notifications. You know, we go live, show up and just watch the astronomy, or if you're into video gaming, watch the video games, or Skylius, watch the, you know, her science chat.
Yeah. 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 She does the
same for Fraser Kane. And,
you know, I went to TwitchCon. I had no idea the scale of Twitch, but I went to TwitchCon this year to support Sky, and a few others. And when I got there, I thought it was going to be like, you know, maybe just a typical conference type event. But I mean, they owned San Diego for the weekend. You know, the after party was all of Petco Park, where, you know, the Major League Baseball team plays. It was insane. That was their after party. And so I was there. And because I was with Sky, we were with a lot of these top Twitch accounts. I mean, these people are making millions of dollars a year just playing video games. And it was like, it's one of those experiences where I'm sitting there and I'm like, first off, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be here. And secondly, it's like, how is this such an eclectic group? Like, you know, the people across from me are, you know, these top video game players, and they're telling their stories, and their stories are literally about like making $8 and $10 million on this project about video games and all of this stuff. And then to my right, I'm eating cheesecake with one of the top porn stars in the world, Manuel Ferreira. And he's telling me like he's got like a billion views or something crazy, you know? And I'm just like, man, I feel like I took a wrong turn. Like, how am I here? And what is this? What is this Twitch thing? And how did it go under the radar for me for so long? And how is it so big now? You know, I had no idea, but they own the world, man.
Yeah, it's been an eye-opening thing. Like I said, about 4 years ago, my son got me into this, and I started watching some of these gamers, like I'm a Cutie Pie, plays League of Legends. Funny guy. He's just sitting there playing this game all day long. He's streaming 8-12 hours at a time, and people are in there chatting. And you notice, like, someone would subscribe. Someone would hit subscribe, and you'd say, you know, so-and-so has just subscribed to the – he called it – he has a club name. Anyway, he would have subscribers. And I started asking around about that. And I was like, how much do you pay for subscription? As turns out, you pay $5 a month for a subscription. And the broadcaster gets three of the dollars and Twitch gets two. And I noticed that he had a couple thousand subscribers. Well, that's $6,000-$8,000 a month he's making in subscriptions. And that's not even including donations. People were donating money constantly so that they could kind of break through the chat. And you add it up and the guy's making 20, 30, 40,000 a month, you know? And then they get also donations and revenue from advertisements. And so these guys can be making 20, 30, 40,000 a month on Twitch, just playing video games. And that was very eye-opening to me. And you know, I've got a handful of subscribers. Foony was my first subscriber. It was kind of funny. It was my first week. I'm sitting out in my backyard. It's like 2 a.m. and this 19-year-old kid from Montreal gives me $3 and I start sobbing because I'm like, I'm all touched. I'm all touched that this kid gave me money.
Start sobbing.
Well, it's so, definitely.
It did. A grown man looking at his damn computer in his backyard, just crying because some kid in Montreal gave him $3. It's my first subscription there.
Really like
it. Yeah. I'm doing something of value, right? This is valuable. Yeah. And I realized like, wow. So, you know, I've got a few hundred subscribers now, so it's great.
Well, let's drill down on that just a little bit, because you said something to me before we started recording that I want to bring up here, and that's about the role of education using Twitch where the students are. Can you comment a little bit about what you think this medium of live streaming can do for education? You're a full-time educator yourself. You also do economic streaming on Twitch. So can you tell us a little bit about what you think this can do for education in general?
Yeah, I think it's you know, early on I got approached by the Knowledge Fellowship, which is an online community on Twitch that's there to promote education streaming. And they actually just inducted me into their official EDU streamers who are there to kind of promote educational material through Twitch as a platform. I think Twitch is behind this also. I haven't spoken with anybody directly about this, but I think that they're excited about this new frontier for their platform. You know, you see a lot of online education kind of starting to take over at universities. Students, younger students, you know, the 18 to 22 year old crowd, they live online. Their friends are online. Their gaming is online. They want to do their school, their education online. And my online classes at university are filling up fast, and my face-to-face are diminishing. And so my thing was, let's go meet these kids halfway. If they're not going to come to my class, I'm going to come to their Twitch. And so I've started doing, you know, office hours there. I've started trying to bring my professional expertise to them, because just doing online workbooks and doing online quizzes doesn't quite expose you to the professors who've spent a lot of time learning a lot of things that they need to share with you. So we're doing that on that front. On the astronomy front, I've just been big on trying to, you know, break down barriers to entry and get people the ability to do astronomy. If it's a financial barrier to entry, if it's a technical barrier to entry, if they just don't have the expertise to handle all the, you know, things that you have to know to do astronomy, you know, I can you know, do the heavy lifting for them a little bit, and just trying to get more and more people into the sciences who may have been traditionally, you know, underserved in that area. So that's one goal of mine that's kind of developed out of the stream.
Do you think that these on that the streaming, whether Twitch or elsewhere, could either augment or replace? I'm thinking replace the lecture environment. I mean, I don't know fully how online courses work, I think it's different depending on the university, but you were saying workbooks and questions, and I'm sure there's tests you have to take periodically throughout the course. Do you think that, you know, there's any real value in sitting in a lecture hall anymore when you can do these streams and you can watch them anytime you want?
I think this is a more efficient way to do the exact same thing. You know, in a lecture, everybody drives to a central location. They look for parking. They meander into the classroom late because they couldn't find parking. It's raining. They're wet. It's horrible. And then they sit down and you lecture for an hour and 15 minutes and everybody leaves. And the whole time, all I'm doing is talking at people, right, as a lecturer. Well, that's what Twitch is.
There's no real interaction in most lectures, are there?
Correct. And matter of fact, it's discouraged. If two students want to start having a side discussion, I have to shush them because I need to, you know, get the lecture out. But in Twitch, you can have 20 side conversations going. First of all, I could have 1,000 people in my room and lecture to 1,000 instead of 30, right? And secondly, you can have people having side conversations. You have people surfing the web, bringing in, you know, they're calling me out on stuff constantly. I'll say some garbo that's wrong. And someone will Google it and like just put a link up there and say, shut up, Greg, you're wrong. Oh, look, then we're learning, right? We're all learning together.
That's happened to me too. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. I'm just guessing. You know, I'm guessing half the time, but usually my guesses are pretty good. But yeah, I think it's the natural progression of the transmittal of information through the lecture format. I think it's just it's the natural, more efficient way of doing it.
Yeah, it seems to me that the technology is there and the kids are already there. The students are already there. Just seems a natural fit for at least the lecture part of the class. And you know, it's probably a lot cheaper. Although I think, I don't know about your university, but many universities charge basically whatever they charge per credit hour for these courses, don't they? Are they any cheaper?
Yeah. My university is very proud of, I'm a professor at Middle Georgia State University and I'm a tenured professor there, but we are very affordable. I've always been proud of that. We're kind of an access university for a lot of first generation college students. And so that's been part of my theme all along of, you know, get breaking down barriers to entry, getting people, you know, into the STEM fields and stuff like that. So I think it's a much cheaper way to do things ultimately, because you don't have to pay for the real estate. You don't have to pay for the classroom and the, you know, all the electricity and all that kind of stuff, right? That's heating and cooling. So it's just a more efficient way to deliver the exact same thing in probably a better environment. Like I said, where you can have students having side conversations. You can have, everybody has access to all the information on the internet. It spurs conversation. I've been having conversations on my econ stream with global financiers in United Arab Emirates, you know, that never happens in a regular classroom, but it's happening.
What's
here.
What's the format of the conversation? Do you just read their chats and then read and then interact with them via chat? Or do you have any other way of bringing them into the stream?
Yeah, I normally prepare a basic outline for what I'm going to say, but it lasts about 13 seconds. And then someone asks a question. Yeah. And we're off to the races, and it can go any direction. Usually, you know, if it's astronomy, it's aliens and Area 51.
I know, but is it all done? Is it all done via chat?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So when you say you're talking with another economist, you know, another part of the world, they're in the chat box chatting with you, and you're reading that. I see.
Okay. That being said, that's the most common way. Yeah. So there'll be people just interacting in chat, but at the same time, I can get on Discord and open up a live communications channel like we're talking now and interview them. So I've had people three or four times come onto my stream and we just do a live kind of interview chat back and forth. And that's possible also. So that's a great extension of the technology that I haven't really, I mean, that's not my world. My world is just trying to figure out how to do astronomy, not to be a great interviewer, but that's something that's going to happen. I'm going to have to start getting better at that because that's a great technology, great use of the technology.
Yeah, I've been using it for my streams and it's great. They can just pop right in and you can talk with them. It's like a call-in show and you can just talk with the people directly. I get a lot out of that, a lot of energy out of that. So I was just curious.
You know, I've felt like the university system has been outdated for such a long time and I don't know why everybody clings to it so tightly, especially the universities themselves. If anything, they should be on the forefront of, you know, embracing new technology. But my first undergrad, I actually spent time out there by you. I went to Auburn University, just on the line there of Georgia. And And I felt then like this isn't measuring intellect at all. It's measuring discipline. It's like, how many PowerPoints can I sit through with 300 other people in class with me? Like, how many can I do? You know, because none of this is really pushing me intellectually, at least a lot of the undergrad classes. It was just like, are you willing to go sit in this room and put up with this? You know, it, as you start getting into your final, you know, your last couple years, obviously that changes. But the first 2 years of school, it felt like that every day. I was like, man, I can learn more on Google. I can learn more at Barnes & Noble than doing exactly what you're talking to, like spending 45 minutes getting to class at the university and then another 45 minutes getting home and sitting in class for 50 minutes at a time. And it just felt so inefficient. And this model sounds like
these older institutions are like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an infrastructure in place that is not going, they're going to hold on to pretty tightly. I mean, everybody wants their new geology building or, you know, their new astronomy building, whatever it happens to be. And you know, the donors want to have their names on physical foundations of buildings.
You know, you see that with anything that has a tradition attached to it, though. I mean, astronomy is no different. Look at the lashback that Stellina and the EV scope get. You know, people with like new ideas for simplification or even, you know, I'd say amplification of the hobby. Like we're spreading this to more and more people by the day. And even the system that you've developed, Greg, I mean, look at how many people, like you said, there's no locality attached to it. You can reach the entire planet at any time of your choosing. And anyone with a casual interest can come to you free of charge if they just want to see it, if they just want to witness it or even participate. So, I mean, you're opening the door, and a lot of these new products like Stellina are opening the door to more and more people, lowering the barrier for entry, and it upsets. It really is very disruptive. It's strange that that it's not more embraced. I don't understand why it feels to so many as something that is, you know, that they have to be defensive about, or, you know, it feels like an attack on them or the time that they've invested.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of thinking about that kind of thing, because we see a lot of institutions around us that, you know, there used to be a lot of reverence for, and a lot of adherence to the structure of those old institutions, and it's an ongoing battle, right? You've always got the forces of chaos kind of going up against the rigid structure. And I think there's a purpose for both of those. I think the structures are necessary for some cohesion in society, but they can become too rigid sometimes. And you need people to get in there and kind of shake things up. And there's always resistance. It's a tug of war between those two forces. And I think we're seeing that in just about every institution right now. I mean, look at Washington, look at churches, look at any major in higher education. Even the taxi cabs, right? That was an old structure with the old taxi cab medallions, and Uber comes along and just demolished it overnight. You know, those forces of chaos just disrupted it, and they fought it, but it was it worked us to a better outcome. So I think all these things, we're in that kind of middle chaos right now, and it can scare people, I think.
Well, if you can somehow, I mean, one of the values of having a degree, it's like you said, there's structure, there's a standard there that you can be compared against. When you say, for example, have a bachelor's in physics, people know pretty much what you've studied, what you know and what you don't know based on your education level. And so that should always be there so that people can know at what level of knowledge you're at. But the real revolution can be how that's delivered to you. If you are awarded that degree from a online university, then that same standard should be applied there as against a brick and mortar lecture hall kind of situation. So if we could keep the standards the same, but how we deliver this information in a more effective way, more democratic way, I think that's where the future of a lot of this stuff can go. You still want to be able to say, well, he has a bachelor's degree in this, and that means he knows or she knows certain things. And to be able to trust that so that when you go get a job or when you go to, you know, advance your career, people have some baseline to say, ah, okay, he's got this amount of training behind him. So,
yeah. And, I'm a lifelong educator in higher education. So, you know, I'm 100% behind more students going to college, right? But at the same time, you see people, you know, I'm an economist. I've got a PhD in economics, and I've spent the last 20 years practicing as a professional economist. Now I'm pretty damn good as astrophotographer. And you know, one thing we're doing on the stream is we got contacted by 8Q12, Mike Aitken. He's involved with Worldwide Variable Star Hunter Group, and he invited me into his research group, and I had no idea. I was like, do you realize I'm not an astrophysicist? And he's like, yeah, but you got a telescope. Why don't you help us do some of our research? And I'm like, okay, what am I doing? Well, help us find supernovas. Well, just today we bagged our fourth and fifth supernova confirmation. I just saw that online. Wow,
congratulations.
And so we're actually doing real citizen science out there. Yeah, thanks. So we're excited about that. And I give credit to the congregation, right, to the group. So we go hunting for these things on the live stream, and everybody's looking at the reference picture, and they're looking at the live feed, and they're saying, oh, wait, is that it there? No, we zoom in. Okay, rotate it left. And it's like, okay, boom, there it is. And we take the images, and I upload those to the ASSASIN program, the All Sky Automated Survey for Supernovas,
the through best Ohio State. Astronomy acronym ever, I just want to say.
I agree. The ASSASIN. That's what I'm doing now, because it's badass.
And that's right. Yeah, so, that's right. The ASSASIN. Yeah.
Yeah. The ASSASIN program. And we've got five supernova confirmations and I think five or six false positives. And that's legitimate, you know, astrophysics research. If I was an astronomy professor somewhere, I could get tenure with that. So, you know, we're doing real work out there. And so, you know, there's this, I agree, the formal education and the structure is necessary in many aspects, but we're finding that you can be very productive in a lot of areas with utilizing these technologies and learn a lot in the process.
Now more than ever, that's true.
Yeah.
Because of the citizen science that's out there. So just so I can understand how the supernova stuff is working, you're using the Worldwide Planet Hunt, or the Worldwide, what's it again? Variable Star?
Variable Star Hunter Group, yeah.
Variable Star. They have a plane wave, if I'm not mistaken. And
yeah.
You're streaming on their telescopes to get these supernovae confirmed, or
no,
are you doing this independently on your use the RASA? Okay. So you're looking at what they're looking at, confirming their observations.
Correct. So ASSASIN is a larger program. It's a worldwide network of telescopes where they're constantly scanning the night sky. Right. And so the computers and the algorithms will pick up a little blip of light, and you don't know if it's a firefly or a meteorite or what. It just says, hey, there's a possible supernova here, 'cause there's a blip of light that wasn't there yesterday.
That's right.
And then those, we get advanced notice on those. I get the coordinates, and during my live stream, I can go to those and search for that little blip of light. And if it's there, it's possibly a supernova. If it's not there, then it's a false positive. And so we get the images. I upload them to the ASSASIN program. They review the work, and if in fact they see a supernova there, then we get published with that supernova, credit for that supernova. And we've, like I said, we've got five of those now.
That's great. That's an excellent use of the stream too. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun, because I never thought I'd be doing that. I love some of these online, you know, crowdsourcing ways of bringing together communities out there to do real science. And I just never thought I'd be the one doing that.
You didn't
stuff,
see this coming. You didn't think, when you were getting your PhD in economics that you'd spend your days. I think that's what most people assume. They're like, yeah, that's what PhDs do. They get online with fartlord.gov or whatever you call them. And, they spend until 2 a.m. hunting down supernovae.
Yeah, that's exactly what economists get. I told my dean today as I was leaving, I was like, hey, by the way, I got another publication. He's like, what, in Econometrica? It's like, nah, in Astronomer's Telegram. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't worry about it.
Look at who I'm published with. Ignore the names.
Yeah, I got to go see if AstroFart 23 is available. I got to go get that handle.
No. Now you got
that's a brand. That's a brand right there.
When I first logged in, I felt like such an imposter.
69. That's right. I got it. Yeah. 69 in there.
I felt like such an imposter using my real name. I'm just like, oh man, I'm so embarrassed right now.
It was a rookie mistake, Dustin. But I'll give you a pass because you gave me a cool telescope. So I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. You get a lot of people on your astro stream questions about economics.
Yeah. We get a lot of Bitcoin questions. I get a lot of tariffs. You know, tariffs are kind of in the news right now with China and all that kind of stuff. So I get a lot of those questions. I for a while I would kind of get off on a bender and start answering those questions because it was just natural for me. But I really want to keep this astronomy focus. So that's why I started the other stream. Just to tell people, hey, go talk to my evil twin brother over there. He's the economist. I'm the astronomer's guy. So I created an alter ego who's actually me to answer those questions on that other stream. But Econ Greg is dominating. he's got much more of a viewership than the other guy. He's only got a few hundred followers right now.
So let's see. You've got the optoscope. You're working out the kinks on that right now, and you stream most clear nights that you go out. What's your plan? What's next? Do you have any longer term things, or are you just going to see where this leads you?
So yeah, the thing has been to kind of grow the stream. That started to be my goal. You know, as I mentioned, I'm an economist, and I run a consulting firm, and many times we're consulting with businesses and trying to, you know, give them ways of growing their business. And I realized, well, now I can do that for myself. I can actually take my own advice. And so I kind of got obsessed with seeing, you know, how far reaching we can get this thing. My goal is by TwitchCon of this year, which is in September, is to have 10,000 viewers. I'm up to about, I don't know, 4,600 or 5,000, somewhere in there now. So I want to double that. We got to 4,000 in about 4 months. So we should be able to, in a year, hit 10,000, grow the stream, bring in more people into astronomy, and let the thing grow organically. Let the audience tell me what it is they want to do. And, you know, wherever that takes us, we'll see if it's more citizen science, if it's more astrophotography, more general space chat. I need to start developing content for rainy days. That's something I want to make. I want to make partner at Twitch. That's a status that you can get once you get big enough. And I'm right on the cusp of being able to do that. So those are near term and medium term goals. And after that, I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
You'll be out at NEEF in New York too, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's right. That came out of nowhere. But one of my viewers asked if I was going to be up at the New England Astronomy Forum, up in upstate New York. And the first five times someone said, "You going to NEEF?" I had no idea what they were talking about. So I looked it up. I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to NEEF." And so I went ahead and booked a ticket, and I got a hotel room, and we're going to go check out some telescopes. I think you're going to be there, right, Dustin? You'll be there for a day.
Yeah, Tony and I went last year. We'll probably both be there again this year. And we go there for, we have a documentary crew out in New York that we've been working with for a couple years on an astro documentary. Actually, we do something called Telescopes in Times Square. And so we try to time it around the same time so that we can head over to NEEF too, because it's such a cool event. I mean, there are a ton of astronomy people under one roof, and you really get to talk to most of the industry there. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm glad you're going to be there, man. We'll definitely have some scotch.
Yeah, so I've got about five viewers that are going to meet me up there. So that'll be a first chance to get to meet some viewers in IRL in real life. And so we've got one guy, Muteri, coming in from United Arab Emirates. He does an astronomy stream over there. He's just starting up. He goes out into the desert outside of Abu Dhabi, sets up a tent and streams astronomy from there, which is pretty cool. So he's coming out. He said he'd bring me some scotch, but I think he's going to chicken out. He's afraid of customs, getting through customs. But, so I'll bring some scotch also.
Well, Dustin will definitely set you up.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's half the fun of being out there, man.
Oh yeah. And Mike Aitken, I mentioned AK12. He's going to be up there. Another streamer, Asteroid Hunters, him and his son, his name's Mike, and his son Brandon are going to be up there. I'm trying to get Fooney to come down. I need to meet Fooney and buy him a cheeseburger or something, because he's been so damn helpful on the stream.
Yeah, that's all he gets is a cheeseburger.
The world.
Wow.
Yeah. You need to hook him up with a nice scope, Dustin. If there's something you could do for Fooney, man, I'd appreciate it. That kid is amazing, absolutely amazing. And he's doing fantastic work with a 5-inch Newtonian on an EQ6 arm mount.
Yeah.
And he does fantastic work. I think he's using a 1600 camera. He's just been invaluable to me with getting the stream up and running and the Discord server up and running. So I want to reward him as much. I've been helping him out as much as I can and encouraging him to kind of keep plugging away. He's up in Montreal getting a degree in computer science or something. Smart kid.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I've seen everything. He's constantly there chipping away at it and seems like a great person.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm very impressed with him. I think I probably scare his parents a little bit. I'm not sure what they think about this this middle-aged guy down in Georgia, like getting their son to do all this work for him for free, like
can,
running a sweatshop or something.
Come out and play.
Yeah, exactly. Can I borrow your son for a little bit longer? I need some computer code written for me.
Yeah, nothing weird. Nothing weird. Wait till you're in New York, man. You'll see what I mean. But Neef is one of the coolest places to go for if you love astronomy. But it is also the capital for awkward conversations every time. There's something there that I leave just thinking, what the hell happened? I mean, I had a guy that looked just like Albert Einstein try to fist fight me over a talk for not answering a question fast enough. And like, wow. I had somebody last year when we were with Tony, he was like, he's like, hey man, I'm not a stalker, but I'm just like, don't start something that way. Don't start a conversation that way. I am on guard now for the rest of the day, no matter what you say.
It can never go well when it starts with, I'm not a stalker, but.
Yeah. And it was Tony, and that's how we met. And then we started a podcast together.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for that, Dustin. Yeah. I'm glad to know what you really thought. Yeah. I do. I start my conversations that way. You know, I'm not really weird, but
well, I'll tell you, it's been fantastic getting to know you guys over at OPT. Because like I said, I was using you guys as a resource for gear. I mean, I bought my 294 camera I bought from you guys, and it's just been great getting to know your team over there and being part of the affiliate with your that's the one thing. It was my first month or so when I talked to you guys, you and Ian and Dustin and. And yeah, I'm still a nobody, but I was like a bigger nobody back then. And you guys were like, you saw what I was doing. I think you got the vision and jumped on board fast with me. And I appreciate all the support you guys have given me, because it's really allowed me to kind of pursue these kind of outlandish goals and achieve them.
No, I think it's such important work, and these ideas. I love the crazy ideas. Like, I live for that, And everybody in this building really lives for astronomy and just pushing this forward and getting it to as many people as possible. And so when you hear like something like this, it's just the what ifs all come to mind. It's like, what if this can work? What if you can set up a telescope to where no matter what people want to see, they just slew it and themselves from anywhere in the world? Those ideas are so exciting that, we have to get behind them. I mean, it's the entire culture of our business. It's the whole point of our business. So we're very proud to be part of it.
Excellent. Yeah, that's that thing. Yeah, we've got the whole website up and running now, where they basically on another window, you open up another browser and you go to the econgreg.com optoscope website, and you can enter the object that you want to go slew to. And it just puts you in line, and we'll have 10 people enter objects or whatever. And we've had 200, that first stream had 240 images they slewed to, and it'll slew to the image. It'll hold it there for a couple of minutes. And then after that's up, it'll go to the next image. And it just gives people a hands-on opportunity to control a really nice, 10-inch F4 scope. They can produce really nice pictures for them right there live.
So the you could see the observing queue and where the telescope is and what it's looking right now on the webpage.
Yeah. So what you'll see is on my stream, you'll have the me at the bottom corner. You've got the mini map that shows where my ROSA scope is. You got the picture that currently is coming through the ROSA telescope, and then in the upper left hand corner, I've been using your name, Dustin. Sorry, the OptiBox and the OptiScope. I know there's probably some copyright violations in there, but I'm gonna. You guys are giving me the gear. I'm gonna use your name, and so the OptiBox is the box up at the top that has the OPT logo in it, and that image that's being displayed there is what the OptiScope is showing. You go to the website to control the scope. And then the image is broadcast live through my feed as I broadcast my session.
Great. That's a great tool. That's really, talk about accessibility. That really does address that, doesn't it?
Right.
And it's pretty easy to find. I mean, it's just twitch.tv, econgreg. And I mean, anywhere on Twitch, if you just type in econgreg, it'll pull it up. But it's such an easy thing to join and be part of. And, you can just sit in the background and be unnoticed and just watch and enjoy it, or you can participate as much as you want.
That's what I do.
So it really is.
Yeah. You incredible. Can lurk all you want.
I'm a lurker, man. I'm not like stalking you, but
there it is.
I'm lurking you hard, dude. Lurking hard.
Yeah, lurking. That's a different issue, man. No, it's a great stream. I do kind of zone out on it, and it's nice to have going, and it's very relaxing. And watching a bunch of people do astronomy and you know, just kindred spirits out there. It's a great place to be. So definitely, if you haven't checked it out yet, guys. You guys listening to this podcast, go over there and check out. You're streaming whenever it's clear, right? I mean, most nights, or do you have a schedule? Is there something?
Yeah. So what I tell people is go to twitch.tv. It's a kind of a weird address, but it's just twitch.tv/econgreg. And that'll take you to my channel. And then you hit the follow button, and then make sure that the notification, just like on YouTube or something, the notification is on. And then when I go live, it's just weather dependent, you know, 8 o'clock in the evening, East Coast time. We've got a global audience, so there's people tuning in at all hours of the day. Australia, got a ton of followers in Australia because, one, they love astronomy down there because they've got great things to see in the Southern Hemisphere. They can't see the Northern Hemisphere objects, so they get to see them on my stream, which I think is appealing to them. And it's while they're at work all day, right? It's during the daytime there when it's nighttime here in Macon, Georgia. So they're tuning in and watching the stream all day long like that. And so, yeah, just turn on that notification. And when I go live, it'll let you know that I'm live, and then come on in and hang out. And yeah, like you said, there's a vibe to it that's just kind of chill. And a lot of people kind of just want to do that. Some people are super active. And I've got a guy in London, his name is Astro B London. And whenever I go slew to an object, we're doing a Messier marathon coming up in March, last week of March. And he's been practicing with me on that. And whenever I slew to an object, he'll go grab off of Wikipedia or something, a description, and drop it in there. Right. And then all of a sudden, boom, we're off to the races, looking at things and learning about the different things that we're looking at. So, yeah, I'm going to go to a dark sky site, and we're going to do an all nighter and try to see all the Messier objects in one night. But I've got a guy who, when we've been practicing for that in some of the last streams, we actually bagged 75 messy objects in one night, just killing it. We did an all-nighter and got, you know, 75 of the 110 Messier objects. And what he was doing the whole time was grabbing little snippets from online about the objects we were looking at that told you how far away they were, what they were.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on your stream on Friday. I saw that. Somebody was doing that. Yeah,
same guy. That's Astro B London. He's the guy that does that. So we'll be doing that. And that's just one more thing that we're looking forward to, is that Messier marathon last week in March. But you just have to kind of have that notify, because it's going to be 8 o'clock when the weather's clear. I'll tell you this much. One thing people do is they go onto our Discord server, and we have some weather facilities there where you can type in .weather/Macon, and it'll show you the weather, the astronomy weather in Macon. And what I'm noticing people doing who like to watch the stream is they'll go in there and they're checking the weather in Macon constantly to see if it's going to be clear, because they know if it's clear, I'll be streaming. So if you just check the weather in Macon, if it's going to be a clear night, I'll be streaming.
Awesome. Just every aspect of what you're doing is got people involved, you know, even having, you know, people copy and paste snippets about what you're observing in the chat. It was hugely helpful. I love that was happening. You know, you had the Orion Nebula sitting on the Rasa, and it was there was somebody posting about how far away it was, and what, you know, how big it is, and how, you know, all that kind of, what constellation. So it was really neat. You really got a good community there. What'd you call them? E-congregation?
Yeah, the congregation.
E-congregation.
The Big Scope Club. We call them the Big Scope Club. And whenever a new follower joins, they're the newest member of the Big Scope Club.
Absolutely. It's fun. It's a fun stream to watch. If you guys listening haven't checked it out yet, it's Econ Greg on Twitch. He streams every clear night, and it's really a lot of fun. It's really engaging. The community there is very active. And I don't know, it's a great place to spend an evening, for sure, for people all over the world. Apparently he's got a lot of people from everywhere. So I want to thank you, Greg, for joining us. And on behalf of Dustin Gibson, I want to thank you all so much for listening. And as always, keep looking up. Space Junk is produced by Deep Astronomy and sponsored by OPT Telescopes in Carlsbad, California. Please visit our website at spacejunkpodcast.com. Also, please send any questions and comments or ideas for new episodes to spacejunk@deepastronomy.com.